Welcome back to 1999, Otto Eisenberg. Patrick Waugh behind the bench of the Avs. Joe Sakic up in the booth is the supreme being. Looks like the Avs are trying to go back to their heyday and try to rekindle that magic.
It's like a high school reunion. All the cool kids are getting back together and seeing if they still have the swag that it takes to win some hockey games without actually being on the ice.
Old school names and new school swag. Well done, sir.
Hey.
Yeah, and Adam Foote also is lurking somewhere around as well.
I did hear that as well.
Heard that. And of course, we have former Avalanche defenseman Rob Blake in the NHL offices, so who knows what will happen there.
We'll use our connections.
Yes.
I can't say that it's something that I would want to do as a franchise. I see the draw as far as having a big name in there and telling people that you're going to spend the money and you're going to do what you're going to do, but Patrick Waugh really doesn't have all that much professional coaching experience.
He's not very experienced behind the bench. That being said, a couple things that I guess that Colorado's banking on is there's no doubt that he's one of the most fearless competitors in NHL history. He has a deep, burning desire to win hockey games, and I think they're hoping that that'll rub off on some of their kids. He does have experience coaching at junior level with those kids, so that being said, they're trying to capitalize on that that possibility of it working.
Yep. It'll be something that plays out, and that obviously that report isn't confirmed yet. It's Waugh's brother stating that they're in the final detail stage of that, but we'll see where it goes, and if it does happen, it may be successful. It may kind of burn and just kind of roll off into the distance, and we won't hear much from it again.
Yeah, there was some talk right after Lindy Ruff got fired here in Buffalo that Waugh was a possibility for the Sabres job because his son Frederick Waugh was signed by the Sabres this year as a undrafted free agent, played in Rochester the full year, and also Sabres top pick Miguel Gregorenko played for Waugh last in his junior career at Quebec. So there was talk about it here. But I saw it as Darcy Regier not wanting too high of a personality behind the bench.
Yeah. Well, also no real new news for the Sabres, not that we were expecting anything there. It is another Tuesday edition of Through a Puck. We welcome you all back for Episode 7. Check us out on iTunes by searching Through a Puck. Check out the blog where we occasionally post, and you can find this podcast, barrelofsports.blogspot.com. We're here for another hour or so today. We're going to hit on the AHL and NHL playoffs, U.S. team, and some new trophy picks that have come out recently, among a couple other topics similar to where we started. I guess since we've started there today, we might as well start with our around the league information. Doug Wilson got himself in a little bit of trouble with the league. He was fined $100,000, $25,000 for the rule that you cannot comment on a suspension within 48 hours of the decision, dumb in itself, and the other $75,000 of that was because the league deemed his comments to be inappropriate. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think first off, it's a GM protecting his player and telling the rest of his team that it's okay, he's going to back you up. He knows that in the playoffs, you've got to play on that line of a little bit of reckless to win those close games and get that advantage on the other team. So I think he's saying to his group, you know, it's all right, we'll take the suspension, but we need to play that way. You know, if he came out and bashed Torres on top of it, then he's running the risk of the rest of his team not playing with that physical edge.
Absolutely. And, of course, these comments and fines are stemming from the Rafi Torres hit on Jarrett Stoll in Game 1. San Jose.
We talked about the hit a little bit last week. We were waiting for the, didn't we, I believe?
I think we hit on it, but I think we didn't know what the suspension was.
Didn't know what the suspension was, yeah. To reiterate, maybe I was telling somebody else, but my thoughts on it are that it was borderline. He did contact the head. Honestly, it feels like it's forever ago when the hit was made, the way these series are playing out. But I think because of who it is, Shanahan had to bring in Torres, even though he probably might. If it was somebody else, he might have given him just a warning.
Even one game might have been.
But since it's Torres, it's a repeat offender, that automatically multiplies the number of games he's going to go for. And I think it was the right call, because if they get swept, then he's whatever happens, it's only for this series. And I think the big factor was, it's Rafi Torres, and it's not somebody else who hasn't have a record.
I would agree with that. The suspension, of course, was through the rest of the series, which at the time could stem anywhere from 3 to 6 games. I do kind of wonder how much of a calculated move it was on the NHL's part, since anything that is 6 games or greater can be appealed. This does not give him that opportunity, I suppose, until after Game 5 is over. I guess he could. I'm not sure how their rulings work there, but he's not able to until at least that point.
Yeah, I think it was that. I think it was a good move on the NHL's part that way. Also, it prevents any backlash or payback, so to speak, during this series, because the NHL, that's one thing the NHL doesn't want, is a series of cheap shots and payback. Even though the fans might like it, the NHL has to appear to not want that.
Absolutely. Other things around the league, the Adams Trophy candidates came out this week. It's Bruce Boudreau of Anaheim, Joe Quenneville of Chicago, Paul McLean of Ottawa. What are your thoughts on those three candidates?
I think Quenneville managed to get a team to come out of the lockout. Granted, his team was pretty much fully intact going into the season, or coming into the lockout, I should say. And so he pretty much already had the system in place. Boudreau, I think his system worked, because it's a get up and go, play offense system, which is pretty easy to play. And McLean ended up using a bunch of kids, fighting through injuries. He lost his big stars and still managed to get his team into the playoffs. I'm going to go McLean just because I think he lost his goaltender, his number one defenseman, his number one center, and his number one winger is 40 years old and still managed to get that team into the playoffs.
I'm going to agree with you on that. I also really like Quenneville on this one. Yes, he had a team in front of him that was already there and knew that they could be successful, but at the same time, you do need a coach that can get those guys ready for every game, and the way they came out, it's just incredible. Now, if you could factor in the postseason, you take a little bit away from it, but of course, this is based fully on the regular season results that these coaches get. So I'm with you on McLean. He did too much with too little to try and take it away from him.
Indeed. Also around the league, we talked about possibly a new coach in Colorado for Patrick Waugh. There's another opening now in Dallas. The new GM, Jim Nill, came in, said he was going to evaluate everybody, and apparently Glenn Gulletson didn't get evaluated very well. So Gulletson's out, opening in behind the Dallas bench. Do you think Lindy Ruff ends up there?
I have seen his name pop up a couple times. Obviously, there isn't a whole lot of deep talk into it yet. A lot of these teams want to wait until the playoffs are over to have all their options there. I've heard his name, and I wouldn't be surprised. It's a team, when you look at it, it's very similar to what he had in Buffalo. with a, I think, a little more core there. So it would be a nice spot for him. It's, as far as if he goes there, I'm not sure where their new GM wants to go. So he is definitely a strong possibility.
Yeah, there's. I don't think there's any possibility of Mike Modano coming back behind the bench. So could be.
We might bring him back in there, and we'll just keep this reunion rolling.
Yeah, why not? Put you and I back in middle school if that's the case.
Right.
And you wanted to hit on the IIHF World Championships.
Yes. The Team USA took the bronze medal in the IIHF Championships. They lost their game on Saturday to, let's see, they lost to the Swiss, who then lost to Sweden in the finals. U.S. took bronze. It was the end of that game. Yes, it was a shootout where, you know, it's an exciting end and, you know, the game's over either way. But the emotion some of these guys had at the end was impressive. Usually the international competition and or a bronze medal game, you don't expect to see it. But Alex Galchenyuk put in that shootout winner, his second shot in a row in the shootout, which I haven't figured out yet, nor have I looked at it. But he put in that shootout winner. Everybody jumps the boards, and everybody's out on the ice in celebration. It was good to see the emotion for Team USA. Yes, they didn't want to take... They would have preferred gold over the bronze, but a medal there is a medal for a team that's struggled lately in international play. So.
Yes, Sweden gets the gold, and Switzerland gets the silver, correct?
Yes.
And by chance, do you know who that goaltender was for Sweden?
Not particularly.
A diminutive backup goaltender from Western New York, my friend, by the name of Jonas Enroth.
I did see that because were the same team that beat the Lindy Ruff-led Team Canada.
Can you say goaltender controversy in Buffalo?
Not until the second month of the season.
Oh,
but eventually, yes, because it's Buffalo, and if Enroth can figure out how to do that in the NHL, it'll be interesting.
Well, I think he made himself more marketable, you know, for the Sabres to if they choose not to use him as their number one, made him marketable to move him, and it also if they did decide to go with him as the number one, it makes Ryan Miller expendable. I personally don't see it.
He was too inconsistent this year. Yes, he didn't play all the time, but you can't have a goalie that's as extreme as Enroth was this year.
His whole career has been extreme, as far as I'm concerned. And they got two young guys in Hackett and the young Russian Makarov. And I think they end up moving him. I think he got himself worth enough for them to trade. You know, he's worth enough for them to sign as a restricted free agent, and then to be able to move. So.
And on goalies, on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of being consistent, John Gibson was absolutely phenomenal for Team USA again. After winning the gold with the World Junior team, leading them to bronze, he looked good in the shootout. He looked good all the way through. Two goals against in the bronze medal game. Got a couple of wins for the U.S. Even in the loss, he had a lot of saves. I can't wait to see him get into the NHL. I'm not surprised if you see Hiller moved out of Anaheim soon to make room for Gibson behind Victor Faust.
Yeah, that's definitely going to see, you could possibly see Hiller go. And think about if he's available, Miller's available, and Luongo's available. There's three really high-priced goaltenders with big names that are available.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I listened to Toronto's year-end press conference, and they didn't rule out bringing in somebody to be a number one over Reimer, despite Reimer's success this year. Every time the question was asked, it was, we'll take a look at what's available. We'll look around. There wasn't a whole lot of support of, this is our guy, we're going with him. So watch out for Toronto to make a move on one of these big-name guys that have proven success.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, for sure. I think that's about it for around the league stuff.
Yeah. We'll run through the playoffs here, and then we'll hit on our couple more in-depth topics that we have set aside.
Absolutely. AHL. AHL updates. We have Game 6 tonight between the Toronto Marlies and the Grand Rapids Griffins. The Griffins came out strong early in this series, getting a 3-1 lead in Grand Rapids against the Marlies. Right now the series sits 3-2. Grand Rapids can close it out with a victory in Toronto. They have to play in Toronto for Game 6 and 7, so that series is definitely far from over. But we could have handshakes tonight. If Toronto manages to win tonight, they will play Game 7 tomorrow. And there will be another Game 7 tomorrow night, with Wilkes-Barre-Scranton forcing a Game 7 against Providence with a win last night in Providence. So and that series got a little.
They fell behind 3-0 in that series, did they not?
They were down 3-0 to start that series, and that series got a little ugly. I believe it was in Game 5. My father's man crush, Graham Mink, got himself a 2-game suspension for attempting to injure Wilkes-Barre goalie Brad Thiessen. Did you see this?
No.
It was towards the end of the game. I think it was either Game 4 or Game 5. And Providence was on the power play, so Mink's playing in front of the net. One of the Providence players crashed the net, and it was obvious that Thiessen had covered the puck, and Mink came from the corner and basically just, I don't know, dog-piled on and jumped right in, and they went a little crazy for a while. And what was my favorite part of the whole thing, I'm watching the clip, I think it was on Puck Daddy, they had a post, and the Wilkes-Barre announcer just says, "And don't forget that Steve McIntyre is still on this roster, he could play," you know, like just the threat of Steve McIntyre jumping over the boards in a suit and tie or something, you know, starts swinging.
I could see it. It's the AHL, I could see it.
Yeah. Big dude. But so that series is going to a Game 7. Those are the two series that are remaining.
So at the latest, the AHL playoffs wrap up tomorrow, correct?
Correct. They wrap up tomorrow. We could probably get a quick hit on, sometime later this week and get our picks in. Whether it's actually even recorder, we can probably just throw them up on the blog.
I think that's what we'll do, is probably just throw them on the blog. We'll get Jay's. We'll save the rundown of the standings for next week's podcast.
Yep. The other two series that are complete, Oklahoma City, who seems to have gotten on a run here, they defeated the top seed, the Texas Stars, 4-1. And also in the East, Syracuse swept away the Springfield Falcons 4-0. Syracuse looks to be steamrolling towards another cup final.
Certainly looking that way. Well, and of course, we can't even do either of the previews since they are one East and one West has been completed.
Correct. And while we're talking about Oklahoma, we want to send out our prayers to those affected by the tornado yesterday. Just a terrible, terrible time. But a great example of salt of the earth guys in the hockey world. We had Darcy Hordichuk and Ben Eager, two former NHLers who are, in my opinion, finishing out their careers in the AHL, who now play for Oklahoma City Barons, went over to some of the one school that was just destroyed, and were looking for survivors, and they had brought some supplies. Jonathan Chichu, another former NHLer who's also there, he went to like a Walmart or someplace and loaded up his SUV with supplies to bring to the relief effort. And so, the arena is about 15, 20 minutes away from where the tornado went through. So those guys, I wouldn't be surprised. It can go one of two ways. They could just totally distract that team, or they could rally around it, rally behind them, rally together with that, and just continue on this roll.
I give you fair warning that if I disappear, the power's out. We just had a big thunderstorm roll in, and that's about all I can hear outside. So,
all right. Well, if that happens, then I'll just keep going. It'll be the Buffalo puck, I guess.
I guess so.
So, NHL update real quick. We've got the all four series still going. In the West, we got Chicago trailing Detroit 2-1. That game goes off. The next game four goes off on Thursday. I guess it's sort of a letdown this second round, Otto, at least to me. We went from the first round where there were four series on each side, and there was literally two games a night, if not more. And you were just on hockey overload. My wife hated it, by the way.
And I loved it.
Yes, we loved it. And now, I mean, I believe it was the Boston-New York series. They started on Thursday. Game one wasn't until Sunday. And these other series have to delay so they don't get too far ahead.
Yeah.
And it's just, in my opinion, it's such a pain that the way they've done it, and part of it's with TV and arena availability. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but just kind of a letdown. You know, the other night there was no playoff games on.
Yeah, it's sad too because you enjoy watching it so much, and it should get better as these series go on and the energy builds, but it seems to let off instead.
They should add teams back in.
Right.
Okay, Florida and Tampa, you're back in. Let's go.
keep a consolation ladder going. Yeah. You know, you got the sub bracket. So, like with the college basketball tournament, you got the NCAAs and the NIT.
There you go.
You just let the other ones play it out, and that way you're filling your day with games.
Yeah. So I said Detroit lead Chicago 2-1, game four on Thursday. Los Angeles Kings lead the San Jose Sharks. Game four is tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern time.
San Jose is taking advantage of that home ice advantage, and they've been looking good, period. You know, L.A. had to come back with two goals in the last, minute 28 to win game two to go up 2-0, and then San Jose wins in overtime to get the series within one. Watch out for San Jose here if they take game four to get the series back to a tie.
Do I sense a little Team Teal coming from Utica?
I don't know. I don't know if I buy in yet, but watch out for it. They're just so good at home, the regular season and the playoffs. It's just hard to write them off. Kind of like Detroit.
I think if LA wins tonight, the series is over.
I also agree with that. Get it done.
If they
back
get it
in LA,
you know. In the East, Pittsburgh leads Ottawa 2-1. Game four is tomorrow night. Pittsburgh just looked to be in a completely different world in game one. Game two, Ottawa played a little bit better, and then
didn't get goaltending. Knocked Anderson out again.
Yeah, and then game three, Anderson stood on his head, and they won in double overtime.
Spezza came back in that one as
well. Spezza came back, as we said, and hasn't been as physical as I thought it would have been.
Nope.
Boston.
Not really as intense either. I mean, game three was, but it was a double overtime game that I tried to stay up for and didn't even make it into overtime. So
I made it to the start of the second overtime. First commercial break of the overtime, I was out.
Yep.
Boston leads New York 2-0.
No help for Henrik Lundqvist.
No help for Henrik Lundqvist, and some injuries for Henrik Lundqvist. Apparently, he's fighting a shoulder problem, which I was really, really, really surprised to hear that that came out from the Rangers side. Because, first of all, Tortorella is one of the best coaches at managing what gets out to the press and all that stuff, and being, you know, that code talk you hear during the playoffs. And but
you know, for, upper body.
Yeah, upper body, lower body. Oh, he'll be fine. Just normal wear and tear. Well, it was like Lundqvist came out and said, no, my shoulder is really hurting me. And then the next day he came out and said, like, oh, no, it's just a normal wear and tear and, you know, soreness that everyone's going through. And so I thought it was really telling that, you know, I think he's hurting more than he's letting on.
I think, did you get to watch any of the game on Sunday?
No.
You could tell. I was surprised they left him in for the rest of the third once it started to get a little out of hand. He was struggling. They had to come out on the ice to stretch him. Just after the whistles, he was waiting to get up. You could really tell he was hurt, and that's not good for the Rangers if they're going to try and do anything.
That's one of those ones you see the injury, and you don't hear what it necessarily is. But you know there's something there, and then at the end of the season series, you go, oh yeah, he's playing with a torn labrum, or he's got a rotator cuff, or whatever. Yep. So that'll be one of those things, interesting things to see.
Rick Nash shoved the monkey off his back and got his first playoff goal of the series in a few years, obviously. I think it was 09 was his last one, but it's probably also his last appearance. So,
speaking,
not a little stock in that.
Yeah, speaking of that series and Rick Nash, who's probably the centerpiece of this conversation, difference in coaching philosophies. We've got Claude Julien, who coaches the Boston Bruins, and we've got John Tortorella, who coaches the New York Rangers. Tortorella is the line mixer. He will throw guys in a blender and see where they come out on paper, and even if you're necessarily a center, you might be playing left wing, or if you're a right wing, you'll be playing center, and, you know, whatever. And he mix and matches his lines as much as he wants. And on the other side of the coin, we've got Claude Julien, who pretty much, for the most part, has kept the same four lines since he won the Cup 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I have my thoughts, but I am not a former player. So, as a former player, Otto, and someone who possibly mixed and matched lines, what do you think?
Well, as a player, you like consistency. You know, you play with certain guys, and you go out on the ice, and you don't even have to look. You know, if you're coming in on a two-on-one, or you go get the puck in the corner, you know where the guy is going to be. So, if you're having success, keeping your lines the same is definitely beneficial to you. Now, to mix it up a little bit, you know, I would say the best way is to give them a whole game together. Tortorella tends to just throw guys around. One day or one shift you're here, one shift you're here, and the next shift you're back there. That much of a line shift, I don't know, is beneficial. You don't get the chance to develop that relationship with your line mates. Yes, you have to mix it up once in a while if you're not scoring like the Rangers aren't. So you do have to do it. But I think the idea of keeping your lines fairly consistent is definitely the way to go.
See, I think some of this is overplayed a little bit. But again, not a former player. I understand your point and can see the validity in that. These are NHL players. These guys are making a career out of this. They are the best players in the world, for the most part. So, you know, and if you're all playing the same system, then I don't see that big of a deal in it. Do I think? I think part of that, though, is when you are changing lines over and over and again, you start to play with your players' heads.
Yep.
And you start to think, they start to think, oh man, I'm not getting this done. Whoop, back down to the fourth line. Or even if you have a couple good shifts and you don't put the puck in the net and you get changed, you're like, what do I have to do? Whereas on the other side, you know, Marchand and Seguin and Bergeron really didn't have a good series against Toronto, but he kept them together. Julian did, excuse me, kept them together, and then by the end of the series, they were their best line in Game 7. And because he had kept them together, they still had the confidence that we can get this done. He's still got confidence in us. We're gonna get some goals in here.
Yeah, and a lot of the difference making comes. You talk about a system, and while a system is a system, you have different lines that do different things. So if you're jumping a guy, you know, between the second, third, or third and fourth lines, it's those kind of jumps because you get a third line that can be more of a checking line where the guys are okay. My mentality is get the puck, put it in the corner, go wear these guys down. Whereas if you get a guy up on the second line, they're looking to control the puck a little bit more. That's where it comes into play. I agree with you completely that they are NHL players. They've played with most of these guys at one point or another anyway. So it's their job to go do it. So it shouldn't make a difference. I think the biggest is like with a power play. Because you're looking to do certain things on a power play.
I would agree with that.
And that's where it comes into play a little bit more than regular lines.
I would agree with that. And you've got a set system that you want your power play to go through, you know, a cycle per se. Not necessarily cycle, but the way that you want the puck movement to go. So I can see that, you know, because if one guy is off sync in the power play unit, it can really make it look ugly. So, another question, or topic discussion for us, Otto, is the Sabres re-signed tough guy John Scott they actually gave him a little bit of a pay increase, and they signed him for the upcoming season. Part of the problem ever since Lucic, Rand Miller here in Buffalo, there's been a cry for team toughness. And so they went and got John Scott. They went and got Steve Ott. And they already had Patrick Kaleta, who you can argue is tough, plays a physical game. I don't know if he's tough, but you know, they tried to bring in that element. And in my opinion, they had two guys that would stick up for themselves and anybody else, and 16 other guys who ran around and did whatever the heck they wanted and really didn't care. So, then you take into consideration a team like the Boston Bruins, who have some tough guys. Zdeno Chara is one of the toughest guys in the league. Sean Thornton's extremely tough. Lucic, all that. Even Marchand, for his size, is a tough character.
He's a tough guy.
Okay. But none of them is a quote-unquote heavyweight. Chara,
right.
I mean, Chara is like a super heavyweight, but
that's
he's
7'3".
Right. So, in my opinion, Boston is team tough. Buffalo is individually tough, or has some tough individuals, but team soft.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is makes a huge difference? Do you think that it's more of a fan perception thing? And do you think it contributes to overall success?
I think where it becomes more important to success is when you get into the team toughness thing. Yes, if you've got a guy like Scott, you know he's on the bench. If something happens, he's going to get out there next shift and he's going to try and fight somebody. The thing with the Bruins is, if they know that if anybody goes near their goalie, or opposing teams know that if anybody goes near Rask, anybody on the ice at any time poses a threat to that player. So it changes your whole mindset, whereas with the Sabres, if somebody goes after Miller, if Scott's not on the ice or Ott's not on the ice, then, you know, there's no immediate repercussion for it.
Well, I guess another example of team tough could be Pittsburgh. I guess their toughest guy or biggest guy is Tanner Glass, who's a, you know, middleweight, an honest NHL player, not knocking Tanner at all. You know, and then they got Derek Englund, but even Letang, you know, you'll see Letang go, you'll see Cook throw.
Yep.
You see that whole lineup step up and just not take anything. And if you matched up, you know, 1-for-1, 2-for-2, whatever, Buffalo might have more guys that are tough, but as a team, you know,
once you start to get down into your middle level players, Pittsburghs are going to beat down on most of Buffalo's.
Yeah. So. And it's not even necessarily fisticuffs. It's finishing your check. It's not backing down in the goal crease. It's all those little things, those that mental edge that you get by being a physical team, that those teams seem to have that a team like Buffalo doesn't. And it might be why Buffalo's not in the playoffs.
Well, even if you look at the teams that are in the playoffs right now, how many of them have that one guy? New York doesn't anymore.
Nope.
Boston doesn't. Pittsburgh doesn't. Ottawa's got Neil, but
he's more along the lines of a Sean Thornton.
He's
going to
play regular shift anyway.
Yep, he's more like a Sean Thornton, Tanner Glass type player.
Then you go out west, L.A. doesn't have it. San Jose doesn't have it. Chicago sure doesn't.
Nope.
Detroit. So the teams that are in the playoffs, they're built more on that team tough that you were talking about, where everybody's there for themselves. I mean, they'll stand up if need be for somebody else, a goalie, the star player who you don't want in the box. They'll do it if they have to, but for the most part, you know, if you're going to hit a guy, he's going to come right back at you. So
yeah. And I guess it's one of those things that it's you got to have the individuals, I guess, that have that mentality, but you got to have other guys that are willing to join in.
A lot of it too is you want your tough guys to be able to score goals.
Yep,
becomes a big part of it.
Well, they got Lucic on the first line, Marchand on the second line. Even Thornton, who's on, I mean, that fourth line of Thornton, Paille, and Campbell.
Yeah.
All three, I mean, I think I've seen Danny Paille throw a couple times, but Campbell went with, who'd he go with the other night? Dorsett. And Dorsett's no soft cookie, you know. So, I really just think it's got to be 1 through 18 for your skaters, and a commitment to where, you know, we're going to show up for this. We're not going to back down. We might get handed some knuckle sandwiches, but not today, you know.
And that's what kind of surprised me. I saw why they brought Scott in this year, because they had to make a response to the hit on Miller. They had to do something. But bringing him back at a pay increase kind of surprised me. When you've got a guy like Steve Ott is your perfect example of what they need there, and unfortunately he's going to be their number two guy in terms of offense, whereas you want him to be a middle of the road guy, you know, a second liner who's there to score some goals and do his job. And unfortunately in Buffalo it's going to be, oh well, why isn't he scoring 30 goals a year?
Yeah, Ott slides in and projects as a second and third line guy who can shut down, you know, you match him up against a team's top line, he's going to bug the hell out of a guy, you know, lay the body on him, and some lumber probably, and just continue to run his mouth. And every once in a while, he's going to chip in a goal here and there, but he's not going to be lighting the scoreboard up. And like you said, unfortunately, that's where they're going to try to put him in.
Yeah, and it's like, just like in Minnesota, or the move for Jason Pominville, it's going to be great once he gets a chance to be healthy in Minnesota and not in the middle of a playoff push when they're kind of falling. Let him be him for a few games to get comfortable there, and you'll see the big difference between being in Minnesota and being in the Buffalo market.
Absolutely. I think just, and also it goes back to our discussion last week about the referees. If the referees are going to start letting teams, you know, start these scrums and run around, then you got to have that for the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, a team like Boston.
And you do definitely see it.
Team like Boston's going to be perfectly built for that kind of run. So.
And Detroit has adapted to it this year. They've looked a lot better than Chicago in their two wins. They're outworking them, they're out-muscling them, and they're getting fantastic goaltending from Jimmy Howard.
How about that shot by Datsyuk? Did you see that yet?
I don't think so.
Oh my goodness. That puck came, went in the net and out of the net so fast that no, I don't even think Crawford thought it was in, but it was obvious it went in, you know, on at first look, replay. I thought, oh, that hit the bar. But after replay, it was like, I mean, he hit a shot right over Crawford's shoulder, you know, between the mask and the shoulder. And it was one of those ones. It was rising as it went underneath the crossbar, hit that back bar inside and shot back out like a laser beam. And he corralled it. That was the thing. It was out in front of him. He corralled it and let it rip all in one motion. He didn't even really wind up to let it fly.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah, it's like if he chose to shoot the puck more, he would have 50, 60 goals in a season.
Yep. But, well, I think with that, we'll kind of wrap up here. Shorter episode this week, but I've got to get out of here and get the dogs taken care of, as they're both probably cowering in the bedroom with the storm rolling through here.
Sounds good. Remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, Throughway Puck. Check us out at the blog. We'll put our round three predictions for the AHL up at barrelsports.blogspot.com. And, oh, one quick question. How was the trip to New York City?
New York City was fantastic. It's we got to sit up in a suite in the outfield, just to the side of the foul pole in right field, and it was gorgeous. Everybody that knows me knows that I despise the Yankees, but it's like a museum behind the suites, and it was cool to walk through there with all the history of the Yankees and everything. So
I would have been there with you, but unfortunately, I shouldn't say that. My wife graduated as a nurse practitioner from Damon College, so I had to fulfill my husbandly duties and support her as she achieved a very big milestone in life. So,
and congratulations to her for that.
Thank you. So I had to pass on the baseball game. So maybe Jay will win some more tickets some other time and I can go.
Well, we will certainly hope so.
But with that being said, glad you had a good trip. And thank you all for listening. We hopefully will be back for episode 8 next week sometime.
Probably early next week we should have some ideas of where these NHL series are going. We'll do our rundown of the AHL standings.
And see if Patrick Waugh's the head coach in Colorado. So,
most certainly.
With that being said, I'm Dan from Amherst.
Otto from New York Mills. We'll see you next week.